Blog Talk Radio.
This is my second Friday in a row, and we actually have a show. That's scary to me these days. And I never really found as much truth in my intro song until tonight, because I really couldn't find my way home from, like, oh, the Tuesday before Christmas. So it took me a long time to find it. So hello, everyone, and welcome aboard, and it's good to be here. Hey, Rex. Hey, Pam. How are you both doing?
All right.
Good. Very good.
Doing good. Hello. Hello to both of you.
Nice. And I want to welcome everyone to Film Eyes and Company with Poetry. What a nice idea to have a show tonight. Huh? What do you think? Of course, I still sound divine, but that's beside the point.
Is that bloody frog in your throat?
Don't you be talking about the frog in my throat. We don't need to discuss that. It's terrible.
Yeah.
I've had such a strange voice for like 3 days now, 4 days now, a week now. I don't even know. It feels like forever. But I didn't start out with a problem with my voice. That got progressively better and worse, I mean, over time. So, Pam could probably tell you when that happened. Oh, my gosh. But anyway, I figured, well, I would give it a try. I mean, everybody else fills in all the DM time, and, you know, it comes some time for my show, I can't say, oh, I don't feel well tonight, too, so would you cover that? I don't feel right about that. Chris PM is always wonderful about jumping in and taking over for me. And Rex, I know you do too when I ask, so I really appreciate it. So as long as you can all tolerate my squeaky voice or my rough voice, I don't know, it depends on what day it, what moment it is, how it sounds. you know, it's pretty
well, annoying. I think we can manage.
I hope so, because it can be kind of a pain, especially if you have trouble hearing me, because I don't have a whole lot of volume. Believe it or not, I'm soft-spoken today. Don't go telling everyone, because that's when they'll push my
button. I can actually, for some reason, I can hear you better when you're sick than when your voice is normal.
Oh,
I think it's because the pitch of it changes.
It does. It gets very low. So that could be it. Well, I'm glad.
It could also be that you're making the effort to be a lot closer to the microphone because you know your voice is on a different level.
That could be too. Or she's too sick to move. Like usually she's bouncing around, turning her head back and forth.
Yeah,
kind of. You know?
Now you're talking. Yes. Yeah, because I'm sitting in exactly the same spot as I usually do. But I don't know. Like, you know, I don't think it's not a conscious thing about me sitting still, but it could be true, Pam. You know, I mean, there's just not a whole lot of pep in my step today. So that could be very possible. But anyway, kids, what do you think? We got a nice board tonight. We have about 17 poems. We have, I think, Rex counted them, six sound clouds or audios, which is always nice.
Wow.
And yes. So every one of those audios is going to be in place of me reading something. Nothing personal, guys. Just might be better that way. Oh, my God. So, yeah, but it's been an interesting week and a half, so I'm liking it. Yes. So, I don't know. It's 7 after 10, and I guess I should shut up and get the party started. So, and maybe I'll still have a voice at the end of it. If not, you two can carry on if I just fade. I make sure somebody knows message-wise that I just can't say anything else. Anyway, I'm kidding, actually. I think I'll be all right. Nothing has stopped me from talking yet. Let me just say that. Rex, I'm going to have you kick us off with this piece by Sky Joe, and it's called Pigeon by Sky Joe. Let me put that up, and I'm going to get you to read that for us.
All righty. Pigeon by Sky Joe. What theater mask to wear for the pigeon dying? Guttered in tarnished aluminum, a crumpled pile of fly ash and clean smoke, half hidden by wrought iron guardrails. What frenzied mummery perform to steady your breasts, jagged, stuttered, a near-broken engine, slow and slowing still. Redmond's evening light stained the balcony crimson. Sprouts of terracotta from brick concrete reflected your daisy petal feathers, a shade like drained flesh. Though I noticed no injury or ailment, gashes, punctures, suede wings, calcite beak, eyes half-lidded, whole and unbroken and beautiful and dying. Months spent in that languid gloaming, dyed scarlet, watching white-gray plumage rise each time, softer, softer, reaching warily, index finger on a smooth back, little bone, silk sheet draped over a woodland trail, traced upward, pulse faintly shivering once, twice. Hand steady, gargoyle in gruesome exertion, perched for new warmth, a simple doomed century. You already abandoned that feathered thing. And bone. All
nice.
Right, ma'am.
Absolutely. Great read there, Rex. Yeah, I thought this was wonderfully interesting. Strong imagery and metaphors. I like how it can be taken very literally, like, you know, literally about being about a dead pigeon, but that the dead pigeon could also represent perhaps something or someone that isn't noticed until death approaches them. Perhaps it's the idea of that homeless person on the street you know, or somebody or a neighbor or somebody that you don't notice until after they die. But I like how he, like, if I take it on a literalness way, I really like how he describes the pigeon as a sentinel, because that really is kind of what they're like. I mean, they strut around. They have almost a self-proclaimed importance. They tend to sit on the very edges of roofs. I really like where he says, months spent in that languid gloaming, dyed scarlet, watching white-gray plumage rise each time softer, softer. Those lines feel to me like the idea of watching somebody die, somebody in their last moments. And then hand steady, gargoyle and gruesome extortion, perched for new warmth. A simple doomed sentry, you already abandoned that feathered thing. The abandoned that feathered thing makes me think of the poem by Emily Dickinson, you know, with hope is a feathered thing. And, you know, I can't help but wonder if perhaps it's that idea of someone who actually has abandoned hope because death looms so very close. Amazing, thought-provoking, right, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
All right, Gene, what do you think?
Well, you know, I thought this was a well-penned poem by Sky Joe. I thought it was nicely expressed and full of well-done imagery. You know, I kind of pulled these lines up near the top. What theater mask to wear for a pigeon dying? Guttered and tarnished aluminum, a crumpled pile of fly ash and clean smoke. Half hidden by wrought iron guardrails, what frenzied mummery performed to steady your breaths, jagged, stuttered, a near-broken engine slow and slowing still. What frenzied mummery, I thought was a neat line there because, well, I don't know about the rest of the country because I can only speak for Pennsylvania, but we have the Mummers Parade every New Year's, and the mummers, they strut, and that's what they do. So as Pam said, you know, pigeons do strut around, and so that was a neat parallel there, I thought. So, but it was very well done, and I'm not exactly sure where the thought came from. I'm kind of curious, you know. Yeah, and, you know, down here in the comments, I did see where he said to someone he was lucky he had a poem specifically about death and sudden unexpected grief. So, you know, that really could be a lot of it. I mean, we don't always expect when someone is going to die. And to capture them in such a way, I thought was well done. So thank you, Joe, for sharing with us tonight.
Sorry. Right. The metaphors are wonderful, drawing off the pitch and the angle on that, but it does walk the singularity, not just death itself, but watching somebody die. A near-broken engine, slow and slowing still. Then the thought of... though I notice no injury, ailment, gashes, punctures, great wings, half sight deep, eyes half lidded, whole and unbroken, and beautiful and dying. So this is somebody who's witnessing that note of months, probably, because you got that next third stanza. Months spent in that languid gloaming, dyed scarlet, watching white gray plumage rise each time, softer and softer. There's that steady note of watching everything involved in the moment, and then that last thought, the last two stanzas are about the dying itself. That last thought, index finger on smooth back, little bones, silk sheet draped over woodland trail, traced upward, pulse faintly shivering once, twice. That's the moment leading up to, and then hand steady, gargoyle in gruesome exertion, perched in warmth. Simple, doomed century, that note of death in the moment. You already abandoned that feathered thing. That is the death right there. The feathered thing being the body itself, the gargoyle, the hand kind of offering up that note of a claw, so to speak, in the moment. And then the purchase of actually watching somebody die over a long period of time, and then seeing that last breath and that last exertion of maybe a goodbye, or maybe just a reach out to hold a hand in that moment of death. So, very well done, Joe. Thank you very much.
All right, Gene.
We're back on you.
Okay, dokey. The next piece I'm going
to
put up.
I don't have to make it Kermit tonight.
There you go. Ribbit. Oh, my God. Okay, this next piece I'm going to put up is called Broken Eclipse, and this is by Robert M. So I have an audio for this. So here is the poem. And here is the audio.
This is my recital of Broken Eclipse. When I was a child, my heart was kin to naivety. My soul was on fire like that of the sun, and burned with a yearning for knowledge and a craving for love. Yet, as many others know, I had succumbed to spiritual eclipse. The fires in me were quelled by the ever-present chill of darkness. The bliss of naivety was shattered into stardust and littered the tomb of denial. Over time, the cyclical misery took its toll, and I lost the will to oppose it and gave in to the dark. Now, in my internal universe, all of the stars have died out, and with the eclipse ever enveloping, darkness is all that remains.
Great read, Robert. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. All right, Jean, how about you?
I knew you were coming here first, and I said, you better get yourself off mute, Gene. You know, as always with Robert, I think this was just a really well-expressed piece. You know, when I was a child, my heart was kin to naivety. My soul was on fire, like that of the sun, and burned with the yearning for knowledge and a craving for love. It was a wonderful way to bring you in. And then, you know, he had succumbed to a spiritual eclipse. Wonderful, as always, metaphors and wonderful imagery throughout this piece. And his ending on this really kind of summed up the thoughts. You know, now in my internal universe, all the stars have died out. And with the eclipse ever enveloping, darkness is all that remains. Robert can definitely tiptoe through a poem and give you different angles on it. And when it pulls together in the end like this, it's, I don't know. I think that there's just a smooth, what's the word I want? Just a smooth dance through this to get where he initially wanted to go with this final stanza. Good heavens. So, Robert, I think this was a wonderful share, and I want to thank you for offering it up before the plague of no shows for 2 weeks. So we're finally getting here. So thank you, as always.
Thank you, Gene. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, this is a brilliant dark write that grabs your attention right away. When I was a child, my heart was kin to naivety. My soul was on fire like that of the sun and burned with a yearning for knowledge and a craving for love. The way he speaks on the thought of emotions and an eagerness for life, consumed by the darkness until that is all that remains. You know, it's a really emotive rite. And another part I really like is the bliss of naivety was shattered into stardust and littered the tomb of denial. Over time, the cyclical misery took its toll, and I lost the will to oppose it. And, you know, that is so true. Any kind of darkness you deal with, you know, whether it's, you know, the darkness that comes from other people or you're dealing with depression and the darkness within yourself, you know, eventually it's difficult to continue that fight, and it becomes overwhelming. So amazing rite and very well done.
Thank you, Tim. This kind of hits that idea of nature versus nurture. And when you take the nurture out of the child in the moment and you offer up your own dark nature, then you've got only you've got the precipice of what comes with that when it comes to a child that is learning, molding itself in the moment, and all it sees is the nature of one's darkness, and it kind of eclipses everything that he is, that note to the he burns like the sun, yearning for knowledge and craving for love, yet receives not the love. So the yearning for knowledge and the burning like the sun kind of gets extinguished in that moment, and lets the darkness crawl in and take a foothold, and from then on it becomes an age-old note to what comes of that child. Does it really walk into the dark side, or does it just become that note of depression that walks the life forever? So, nicely done, Robert.
Absolutely. Okay, now, Pam, it's going to bring me to you. And the next piece is called Trapped by Darkened Auras. So let me put that up for you. And whenever you're ready.
Blizzard snows show no sign that a trail was ever here, dusting the ground, covering the footprints, wiping the canvas clean. So no one will know this beautiful scene holds a dark secret. Terrified cries in the night from the hiker trapped within the bear trap and trapped in the embrace of frozen woods and home.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. Damn, those last few lines give it a whole new meaning, because the picture is actually beautiful. And you look at that, most people would go and find offer up the beauty that's within it. But Christina walked the dark angle of those last few lines, terrified cries in the night from the hiker, trapped within the bear trap, and trapped in the embrace of the frozen wood. So you get a second angle look at the possibility of what lies behind that frozen motif. All right, Jane, what about you?
You know, I thought this was a great piece, and like you said, you know, the image is really, you know, kind of lovely. And Darkened Auras lived kind of true to her name. She darkened it up, and I think she did a fine job with that. I'm looking here. You know, blizzard snows show no sign that a trail was out here, dusting the ground, covering the footprints, wiping the canvas clean. So, you know, everything has been just covered up by the snow, and that's why it looks so peaceful and serene, I assume. But the ending of this really does bring out the actual darkness behind that beauty, and I think it was well done. So thank you so much, Christina. Nice job. Really, really well done. Great brevity.
All right. Thank you, Jean. All right, Pam, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, this was an excellent brevity. Dark and horrific, visceral imagery at the end, and also brings in the senses of, you know, the horror that you would hear. I really like how, and especially at the end lines, she speaks on that horrific final moment where you realize that you're going to die alone, cold, and in the most horrible pain you've ever felt in your life. Just an excellent dark rite and very well done.
Right. Back to you there?
Yes. We're coming back to you.
Oh, wow. Okay,
hey,
sorry. You know what? That's what I missed. I got confused. Doesn't take much.
Well, I didn't want to dig you twice in a row, so.
Gotcha. Okay, now this next piece I'm going to put up is by Titus, and it's called Each So Brave, A Royal Knight Now Stands. So let me put this up. And I have an audio for this one. And let me find it. Here we go.
Each so brave a royal knight now stands. In Flanders fields 'tis where the brave have slept. While time would have been flagrant to us all, merely a blush to recollect who kept, and yet does not forget how great the fall. Death requiems the past and present smile, as soldiers each their wounds are healed untold. Still, stand aground men, now then, single file, where victory was planned, survival grew. Each so brave a royal knight now stands. The liberty to which freedom belongs, blind faith, all ears do carry its commands. The amethyst whispers like his scanty songs, to right the wrongs of an impartial fight, has lived as might we have done now to save those souls, include how vividly the plight, be dight to have men heightened, such are brave.
Great read, Titus. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. And he did drop in two prompts in the AN. Life whispers the death requiems to the ears of the blind soldier. You fed me smiles on the seaside amethyst nights, twisting fingertips under the cotton-sprinkled sky. All right, Cam?
Yeah, this is absolutely beautiful. A wonderful classic feel to it. Brilliant imagery. Heartfelt lines on the sacrifices made for the freedoms we have. And I really liked this all the way through, but what grabbed my attention especially was the third stanza with each so brave a royal knight now stands, the liberty to which freedom belongs, blind faith, all ears do carry its commands, the amethyst whispers lightly scanty songs. Amazing lines and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you? But you got to unmute first.
Not much different to whether I do or I don't. You know, I think that, as always, this was a fine piece put out by Titus. You know, the starting out there with In Flanders Fields. You know, I so associate poppies with Flanders Field and not the lavender. I believe that's the image of lavender. But In Flanders Field, 'tis where the brave have slept, while time would have been flagrant to us all. Merely a blush to recollect who kept, and yet does not forget how great the fall. Just a wonderful, as always, classic sounding piece by Titus. He has a wonderful way of doing that when he writes. It comes. The first read of it just seems aged. It seems like it's something that's been around, something that is familiar. You know. And I find that to be intriguing how he pulls that off. So great job, and thank you so much for sharing with us, Titus. And appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gene. I do agree with that that old note to this classic. And the bluebells, picture of the bluebells offers up that note of where it hits it, each so brave a royal knight now stands, offers up that note almost as a tribute when they bloom to each who has fallen. And so that there, when that appears, you get the idea of that story untold. Yes, it gets rebirth every year because at one point these fields would have been nothing but a barren landscape, decimated and then filled in with the markers and the gravestones of all those who died on the fields. So this offers up a note of tribute to those brave fallen, because he does in another one, each so brave a royal knight now stands, the liberty to which freedom belongs, blind faith, all ears to carry its command, the amethyst whispers lightly scanty songs. So you get a note of the wind blowing through these fields and these bluebells and offering up a note of song, a fitting tribute, especially with the idea of the purple giving that note of a stand of royalty, a blush of color to what once was not a pretty place at one point in time. Well done, Titus. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
All right, Gene, we're back on you.
Okay. You got it. Let me go over here. And let me say, Pam, I'm going to give you this next one to read by Jack Blue. And there you go. Whenever you're ready.
Ballad for Lucy Lilac, number 11, by Jack Blue. By the sleepy candle flame, Lucy, feeling white Noel, found a little unicorn, like an angel of delight. Riding it, she flew away, brightly to the blissful sky. On the canopies of clouds, a lake of bluebells joyfully welcomed her with daffodils. Along the stairs to outer space, and she found some ladybugs soaring on the cosmic gale. Suddenly, the unicorn began to hover down below, lingered on the lunar hill, or actually the starlight snow, and balked for a pretty while before it dived to the blue. Lucy wondered at the world, woke up to the light, and saw a little lilac unicorn fly the canvas with a brush, rolling through the miracles of snowy sapphire Noel. End poem.
Great read, Sam. Thank you very much. All right, Gene.
Well, you know, I am. Jack always cracks me up. Well, Luke, I should say. I think that, you know, this is a great. It had great fairy tale imagery all throughout. For a minute, I was like, Lucy in the sky with diamonds. Here we go. You know, because it was getting out there, you know, between the ladybugs and the unicorns and all this stuff. It was wonderful. It was a great smile. It was lighthearted. And I thought it was just nicely done. So, Jack, I have to say thanks for sharing this with us. God, I can't talk. Just really nice imagery. And I just thought there was something very lighthearted about it. And that's what I enjoyed the most. So, nice job and thanks.
All right. Thank you, Gene. And Pam, you got to read it?
Yeah, this really did have wonderful imagery. It was such a lovely and delightful write on a magical Christmas dream where one goes soaring into the cosmos to come and then goes back to Earth to awaken and to look at the artwork that perhaps they were looking at before falling asleep. That inspired the dream. So amazing write and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. Yeah, I do like that note right at the top, Lucy, feeling white Noel. So there's a nice touch of Christmas, the candle flame flickering in the window, and then the second stanza hits on the scenery of seeing beyond that moment in whiteness, on the canopies of clouds, a lake of bluebells joyfully welcomed her with daffodils along the stairs to outer space, and she found some ladybugs soaring on the cosmic gale. That note, the daffodils, hits at the idea of they're the first flowers of spring. So with that, you then walk into the note of ladybugs offering up the spread of joy and the note of taking along their what comes off the flowers along their legs to spread to others. So there's that note right there in the second stanza is that thought of a spring will come soon enough. And then the unicorn began to hover down below the legged of a lunar hill, or actually with the star-like snow, and balk for a pretty while before it dived to the blue. So the upper the note in that one is the we still got a little bit of winter before that blue comes to actually rest. And the finish out is the what one can imagine within their mind as they offer up that thought to when the snow finally dissipates and we get that colorful garden to reemerge for real. So, thank you, Jack. All right, Gene.
And here we go. Next one I'm going to put up, Rex, is for you to read. And this is by, this is by Ben Hart. So it's called Birdbath. So whenever you're ready.
Birdbath by Ben Hart. The rosebud can only tell its color by what shade the sky is not. A process of elimination, like all life, gets growth and loss. But I can only tell the color of my eyes when the river stilled into a birdbath, and they were the color of the sky, smoldering from winter's wrath. And spring was just the mask of basilisk horizons, sucking thumbtails, the loneliest north where we're born of glass. Dancing blind gods into a hailstorm, monsters in the maelstrom just to hear us break, shatter into rose bush mosaic stones, shattered into rose bush mosaic storms on the walls of the heaven to which we never prayed. Colorblind ivy playing the battle game with identity, telling people they don't know their thorns, only why they're late. End poem. All right, Pam.
Yeah, this certainly, well, first of all, great read there, Rex. You know, as always, he has amazing imagery and metaphors. I really like how he speaks on the idea of how we view ourselves in an almost like distorted like mirror. Like you imagine perhaps like the water of the birdbath, the wind coming by or a bird landing in it, and the ripples that create a distorted view of self. I also like the emotional impact of these lines. And where it says, the loneliest north where we were born of glass, dancing blind gods into a hailstorm, monsters in the maelstrom just to hear us break, shatter into rosebush mosaic storms on the walls of a heaven to which we never prayed. Powerful lines there that speak to me on the idea of better to feel pain than to feel nothing at all, better to feel anger than nothing at all. Amazing right and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought this was a well-penned and nicely expressed piece. Great couplets all the way through. And each one kind of stood alone on it, or stood on its own to an extent. You know, but I could only tell the color of my eyes when the river stilled into a birdbath. I thought that was kind of an intriguing thought there. And they were the color of the sky smoldering from winter's wrath. So, you know, again, you know, you see that reflection back, and, you know, I guess that's where he's pulling this from. And spring was just a mask of basilisk horizons, sucking thumbtails. It just has so much depth to it. And I'm not really the qualified one to sit here and dig in deep, but that's why we have you, Rex. and thank you for sharing with us, as always, Ben.
Nice. Thank you, Gene. Well, the rosebud offers up the singularity, the oneness, just like the a process of elimination, like all life, this growth and the loss. That note to the, but I can only tell the color of my eyes when the river spilled into a birdbath. The river offers up the note of tears. The birdbath being the eyes itself, but they have to be clear in the moment. They will color the sky, smoldering from winter's wrath. Winter's wrath offers up that note of something cold and hard and piercing has bent their efficacy of self. The spring, that note to maybe a little bit of time down the road, was just the mask of basilisk horizon, sucking thumb to nails. The basilisk horizon, snake-filled horizons, the idea of being wary, sucking thumb tails, kind of hits on the idea of biting one's nails or sucking one's nails, sucking one's thumb, a note to comfort in the moment. The born of glass idea is the sense of self as a whole. But he does hit on the hailstorm, the maelstrom, just to hear its break. So something has happened in the moment to break that note of purity in the glass, not totally shattering, but cracking one's notes of who and what they are. And then he hits it up with shattering rosebush mosaic storm on the walls of a heaven to which we never prayed. The idea of colorblind ivy playing with a pedal game with identity, you know, or it hits on identity. Okay, so there is an inner turmoil going on, and it's not being helped out by anything around. And he got that last line, telling Peter they don't know their thorns, only why they're late. Maybe the idea of you have to age a bit more, grow into your mind, so you understand the note of where you are and who you are. So, well done, Ben.
Nice comment, Rex. Okay, for the next poem I'm going to put up is When the Rain Comes by S. Sharp. And I have an audio for this. And here we go.
When the rain comes, like smoking tobacco sticks in a high school stall, lungs fill with sunshine like running naked on the beach except for sun and shadow, keyboard clicking, tap, tap, typing, a lead foot in a blind turn. Then life becomes strange. A bird rolls in the mud, crash of thunder like a car careening into a roadside ditch. A crow squawks outside my window. Fingers tap temples, light angles through gaps, shades close to everything but sound and feeling. Through the window, the crows squawk about meaning and method. They crow and squawk. I squirm, a worm pushed up and out by an evening downpour. Keys tapping, clicking, crash of thunder, rhythm and rain, then silence, sustained silence. Parting the shades with two fingers, the end of a downpour, wet walks, saturated grass. And the worm has a crow by the beak.
Nice.
Great read, Scott. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. All right, Gene, you offered up that nice note. What'd you think?
Because, you know, I like the way that Scott always presents his poetry. He has that, I don't know, there's a little bit of a what's the word I want? It's like a coming in his step. You know, it has that kind of a short way of presenting it. And I always get a kick out of that. This seems familiar to me, and I'm getting a little nervous now because I'm like, wow, why do I recognize some of this? But I think not that long back we had read something about a worm and the crow, and I don't know, maybe it's the same poem, maybe. No, I don't even want to dwell on it, because with my luck, I'll say, oh, we already did this show. I have to be good now, keep my sanity. But I think that this was a well-written piece by Scott. Like smoking tobacco sticks in a high school stall, lungs filled with sunshine, like running naked on the beach, except the sun and shadow. You know, what an intriguing way to start this off. It definitely grabs your attention. And then you start to read more into it, and you're like, okay. But I did peek at the author's notes because I'm not crazy here. This poem was written with the idea that a writer has critics that complain about little things. But in the end, the critics always seem to come back and have the writer's words on their tongue. So it's kind of about that silent appreciation. People want to say, oh, well, this or that or the other thing. But those words tend to be the ones that people remember. And I thought it was kind of clever the way he turned it around at the end. Parting the shades with two fingers, the end of a downpour, wet walks, saturated grass, and the worm has a crow by the beak. I thought that was a great twist there. And nicely done. So thanks for sharing with us, Scott. I think it's a fine piece.
Thank you, Gene. Pam,
What do you think?
I thought this was just a really clever write with brilliant imagery and metaphors. I like how it speaks on the idea of synchronized sounds and the search for meaning in life as we rise from the mud. I like how the crows me in, and I understand that he's got an author note, and, you know, so obviously he's telling us about the poem. But besides people who have opinions, you know, I also thought of the crows and their squawking as being the idea of people who just love to gossip, who can't mind their own business. I also like how the beginning stanzas to me speak on the thought of how an author, a poet, can control their surroundings within their story, where one moment you go from those delightful moments to, you know, a car careening into a roadside ditch. I think this is a wonderful piece to offer up food for thought, and very well done.
Nice. Thanks, man. I do enjoy the metaphors in this. It's quite a bit. That opening stanza kind of hits on the idea of inventiveness in the moment, the freedom and breathing and letting it go. And then the keyboard clicking, tap, typing, a left foot in a blind turn. Then life becomes strange. The bird rolls in the mud, crashes thunder, like a car creaming into a roadside ditch. A crow squawks outside my window. The crow representing the critics. And that next stanza was really well done. Where is it? To everything but sound and feeling. Through the window, the crows squawk about meaning and method. They crow and squawk. I squirm, a worm pushed up and out by an evening downpour. The crow, again, representative of the critic. And the evening downpour is that that allusion to the comments that come. Then you get to that thought. Keys tapping, clicking, crash of thunder, rhythm and rain. The note of all the outpouring. What is, what isn't, and then the silence is all of a sudden they've gone. Sustained silence, meaning they've gone, disappeared totally in the moment. And then that note finishes, finally getting past that note in the realm of critics and being able to take a brief sojourn outside the realm. But yes. And the worm has a crow by the beak. The idea of all of a sudden the words are streaming out of the mouth on something else, and it's the critic who is offering up the critique. Yes, but they don't offer up anything positive, just the negative angle, and that's what the rain pouring down is. And that's a that can be bothersome. It could be it could be depleting to one's own thoughts in the moment. So I like it, Scott.
All right, Gene. We're back on you.
Okay. Now, let me get my act together here. Okay, Pam, I'm coming to you with this poem, See You Then, by Jessica C. Wheeler. And Rex, I'll be right back.
See You Then, by Jessica C. Wheeler. Each time I watch the setting sun descend behind my home, it kindles memories that run and halts the thoughts that roam. The earth still mourns you like I do. You left us for the sky. The wind I chase still looks for you. The ocean sounds your sigh. You fade from years and I can't see into your timeless sleep. Yet you remain a part of me. The roots we share run deep. The memories I guard fall through. Sometimes they slip away. But I'm brought back to me and you when my two daughters play. Each passing winter will be cold. At times I might forget. And though I can't watch you grow old, I'll see you next sunset. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, this grief, the note of loss, the idea that that person still lingers in one's mind, and even though they're not there, those memories keep converging. It might be a special time of year, maybe the birthday, maybe the when they died, or maybe both, maybe holidays. So it does walk around where you can fit it into a number of little niches when it's particularly important at that point in time. And I should hit some. The memories I guard fall through. Sometimes they slip away. But I'm brought back to me and you when my two daughters play. So this is obviously about her sister, since it's walking back in time and hits on the idea of her two daughters. And then the finishing end of it. Each passing winter will be cold. At times I might forget, and though I can't watch you grow old, I'll see you next sunset. So this promise of once again being enamored with those memories, but in another realm, another time, another place. Good done, Jessica. All right, Pam.
All right, yeah, this is absolutely beautiful. My heart goes out to Jessica. You know, I'm really sorry for her loss. I can't imagine what it would be like to lose a sister. It's such a beautiful expression of her grief and the memories that they share together. And I like how this speaks on even the most simple moments, such as a sunrise or a sunset, can bring forth memories of someone who was dear to you. I really like the memories I guard fall through. Sometimes they slip away, but I'm brought back to me and you when my two daughters play. Each passing winter will be cold. At times I might forget. And though I can't watch you grow old, I'll see you next sunset. Just absolutely lovely lines. And it is true that there will be times that, you know, memories will start to slip away. And then, you know, the simplest of things will spark it. Very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Gene, you back yet? Or are you doing a little bit more rebreathing?
No, I am back. I've kind of given this a quick once over, and I don't think it's really fair for me to give you a comment based on that. I think from what I've seen, it's a beautiful piece, and written for, you know, for her lost sister, which is something I can't even imagine. I think that a wonderful tribute type of piece, and great thoughts expressed here, and beautiful work as always, Jessica, and I want to thank you for sharing with us. As always, and I'll leave you a little bit more, a better written comment after the show. So thank you so much. Always appreciate it.
Back to you, Colonel.
Yes. Ribbit. Okay. Thank you, Pam, for reading that one. I'll try and keep my voices all together here. Rex, that's going to bring me back to you. God, it's crazy. And Rex, I'm going to ask you to read this piece by Jody Melton. And the title is I Do Not Know. Let's Dance. There you go.
Let's Dance by Jody Melton. In the shadows of my mind, a creature stirs as I dance in laughter with the ever after. My path, one straight and narrow swerves, a monster of my own, whispering cursed words. Born from fear, it lurks within my soul, a dark parasite on an endless haunting stroll. Invisible chains, it binds me with regret. It voices a symphony of chaos, hard to forget. Every step I take, it's there, mocking my stride. In the mirror, it grins, nowhere for me to hide. It feeds on my insecurities, thriving on my doubts, twisting my thoughts, turning them inside out. A saboteur of dreams, a thief of my peace, its hunger for my demise never seems to cease. I am my own captain, trapped in this dance, with the monster inside me in a perpetual trance. It echoes the chorus of a song so grim, practiced all my sins, never gonna let me win. It whispers, you're nothing, with each breath I draw, scratching at my spirit with its invisible claws. In the silence, its voice becomes clear and loud, drowning out hope, spinning beneath a darkening cloud. This monster, my creation, born from within, feed from my fears, my every sin. A self-sabotaging force, it thrives on my pain. In its world of darkness, it seeks to reign. But in this twisted waltz, I've come to see the monster inside is just a part of me. A battle I fight within the confines of my mind, seeking a light, getting harder to find. So, I'll dance with my demons, face them day to day, learning to control them in my own way. For in this struggle, I find my true might, confronting the monster in me, a fire I'm ready to ignite. End poem.
Wow.
All right, Dan.
Yeah, this is a powerful write. Amazing imagery. I like how you speak on the idea of learning to face our inner monsters, our inner demons, learning to dance with our demons and find our own strength, to realize that we don't have to stay a captor, you know, a captive. We don't have to stay a prisoner of those dark things that haunt us. Instead, we can, you know, become that flame, become that strength. I really like this all the way through, but especially the stanza that starts with, it echoes the chorus of a song, so grim practice are my sins, never going to let me win. It whispers, you're nothing, with each breath I draw, scratching at my spirit. And then where it says, a self-sabotaging force, it thrives on my pain, in its world of darkness, it seeks to reign. You know, we oftentimes, we are our own worst enemies. So I thought a self-sabotaging force was a particularly thoughtful phrase to put into this poem. Excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
Oh, my goodness. I love this piece. I did. Didn't even get to read it all with you. I kind of had to go back and kind of look at it again. I'm with Pam. I love that one stanza that she just read. Or quoted from. And I also like this last stanza. I thought each one was very well done. It was really just greatly expressed and very well put together. This final one. But in this twisted waltz I've come to see, the monster inside is just a part of me. A battle I fight within the confines of my mind, seeking a light, getting harder to find. So I'll dance with my demons, face them day to day, learning to control them in my own way. For in this struggle, I find my true might, confronting the monster in me, a fire I'm ready to ignite. I just think that something about it, I just like each one of these stanzas, and I think they were just so well use the word put together, just crafted, and the thoughts were so clear, and so nothing was lost with the rhyme. It just a great job. So excellent work, Jody, and thanks for sharing with us as always. Absolutely.
Thank you, Gene. It's light and dark, yin and yang. That note of the confrontational note of the angel and the demon on the shoulders. But yeah, it's in the mind. That note of the fight, the struggle within, and how instead of trying to really fight it because you can't, it's there. You've got to accept the note that it is there, and you reach a sort of compromise where you can keep it at abeyance, but still understand its foreshadowing depth and how it can defeat you if you let it. So that note of I find my true might, confronting the monster in me, a fire I'm ready to ignite. The idea of the angel taking a little bit of a little bit off the devil's plate by offering, "No, you want to play with fire? Well, you ain't nothing. You ain't met nothing like me yet." So, nicely done, Jody.
All right, Gene. We're back on you.
Okay. Yeah, I gotta figure out what the hell I'm doing now. Okay. The next one. That was good, so we got that one. Okay, I'm going to grab this next one. And this is by Diane D. Let me put it up. And this is called I Will by Diane D. And I have an audio for this one. And there it is. Awesome.
I Will by Diane D. I will stroll with you at your pace and carry the frailty of your time below the moon of my fingertips, so that I may slow your hourglass and etch my dawn onto your dust. I will clasp your wrinkled fingers. My hand will have the nimbleness to be the bend your knuckles need. Lean on the springtide of my youth so we can take the roads you miss. I will drain the hues from my pen as I ink your tolerance on my palm. When I glance into your yesterdays, I think in black and white because color is but a consent of uniqueness. I will paste the writings on the walls that map the steps toward abundance. Wait for me at the gates to freedom. I will make my way into your legend by embalming the oils of your youth. We will plant the seeds of knowledge to adorn the walkway of your yields. I'll walk the indents of your footprints through the gates of your persistence to water the garden of my tomorrows. End poem.
Thank you, Diane. Great read. Thank you for Sound Mountain. Very much appreciated. Gene, you want to kick us off?
Wow. I remember this piece when it first started off. I'm like looking at it going, I know this piece. And I scroll down, and sure as heck I did. I thought it was a wonderful piece by Diane. It was warm and tender, and her emotions were so well expressed in it all the way through. It pulled hard on the heartstrings. I really thought it was just awesome work, and I'm so glad she brought it back for us to hear again. it's just a beautiful, beautiful expression. So thank you for that, Diane. I much appreciate it. That was worth waiting for, too. Lots of good ones.
Thank you, Gene. All right, Pam, what do you think?
Oh, I think this is an absolutely amazing rite. About a year ago, Diane and I both entered the same contest called a Buddy Up contest. And what it was is that you had to choose a buddy who would choose, it was a pre-rites contest, and you would choose your buddy's poem that they would put in, and they would choose yours. And this was the one of Diane's that I chose for her to put in to the contest. It really is just beautiful and heartfelt. I loved how she had this message of communication, love, and giving, and learning from each other between the generations. I loved how the closing stanza is both voices joined in harmony, and really truly a rite that's worth reading over and over again, and plants those seeds of knowledge and pulls at the heartstrings. And I liked it all the way through, but, you know, especially the second and third stanzas. Amazing rite and very well done.
Absolutely.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. And you're right. This is this works a little bit more, that it isn't just about the thought between age and youth. It's actually about taking that from the age and bringing it forth from the younger generation, which seems to be a little lacking now. So there's a note to learning from that old and gnarled hand, because she hits on that idea. My hand will have the nimbleness to be the bend your knuckles need. Lean on the springtide of my youth so we can take the road to miss. That idea of trading on the stories of from a youthful angle up to the older angle, but also from the age down to the youth, imbuing and learning of those older stories that she herself hasn't experienced. And she hits on that. I will drain the hues from my pen as I ink your tolerance on my palm. When I glance into your yesterdays, I think in black and white because color is but a consent of uniqueness. The idea of black and white used to be the what everybody saw as far as pictures, television, and those notes. There was no color back then. It was all a black and white motif. You get the shades of amber in there from age pictures, but they were still black and white also. So the idea of seeing through her eyes a different time when things were that way, and then molding herself within that note to express, because she hits on that, we all plan to seek the knowledge to adorn the walkway of your yields, or walk the indent of your footprint through the gates of your persistence toward the garden of my tomorrow. The idea of taking those little tidbits of knowledge and replanting the seed that came to her to now offer up to her children further down the line. So nice to be done, Diane. All right, Dean, we're back on you.
Okie doke. The next piece I'm going to put up is called Exploit Your Own Silence by Arendt Panther, and I have an audio for this. So give me 1 second. And here we go.
Exploit Your Own Silence by Arendt Panther. There were times I found my dreams draped in cashmere, yet somehow still envious of moments not determined by sacrifice or idealism. To live with a mind where platitudes are withdrawn refreshes a soul otherwise defined by the chaos of merely existing, unable to exploit the necessity of one's own silence. Such extremes, that tidal drift of emotions to and fro without remorse, cradling the weight of mountains now borne by unwitting shoulders. That's the price of indifference in a modern world, richly devoid of calmer waters to soothe the pretension bound within the obligations surrounding every absent choice. End poem.
Great read, Aaron. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam, you get the kickoff.
Okie dokie, Smokey. Wow, I mean, this one really impressed me. Truly a brilliant write with wonderful imagery and metaphors. I like how he writes on to me the idea of the heavy burden that comes with indifference. You know, if you're going to act indifferent to the world's problems, if you're not going to speak up against evil, you know, then eventually that will come for you. That will be a burden that you carry. You can't ignore a problem just because you don't think it's yours. I really like cradling the weight of mountains now borne by unwitting shoulders. That's the price of indifference in a modern world, richly devoid of calmer waters to soothe the pretension. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. And Eugene, what you got?
I sound more like Eugene than I do myself. You know, I have to say, I really did like this piece very much. I loved how he started this out. There were times I found my dreams draped in cashmere, yet somehow still envious of moments not determined by sacrifice or idealism. I something about that, that draped in cashmere line just really, I don't know, there was something about that I just really liked. It was well done. And then, you know, that second stanza as well. To live with a mind where platitudes are withdrawn refreshes a soul. Otherwise defined by the chaos of merely existing. Just great lines all the way through, and I think that it's a fine piece, and I have to agree with everything Pam said, and then she picked up the third and fourth stanza, so hey, I'm, you know, thanks, Pam, I don't have to read that much. But it is and it was really well expressed. So wonderful work, and thank you so much for this, and I'm glad, Aaron. I know we've had issues where I've missed one or two in the past, so I apologize. Nice stuff. Mm-hmm.
Nice. Yeah, I like that opening stanza, too. It does kind of hit on that idea of apathy, where there is no real strength within the individual itself. It hits up that idea of hard times make strong men weak times, and weak times itself offer up the indifference that eventually leads to the point where strong men are born once again. So it, again, bites at the idea of how generationally, when times are really easy, society becomes apathetic, and you get this this derivative nature where people think their voices are more important than anyone else's, and all you hear is them. And the idea of silence, exploit your own silence, is that idea of telling yourself, you need to shut up. You need to actually, if you're going to engage in something, you might actually want to do a little bit of research, learn yourself, instead of just shouting into the void about what is, what isn't, and why you're no longer draped in those cashmere dreams. And that sort of determined by sacrifice or idealism is the idea that you're not working hard enough to understand why you have such an easy life and why in the downturn that does lead to the point where the next life coming up gets to be hard, really hard, because of the apathy and the indifference that is shed easily. So nicely done, Aaron. I like that.
Absolutely.
All right, Gene, we're back on you.
I knew you were coming to me real quick. I just knew it because I'm still writing this comment, but that's okay. I get it. I'm going to just sing a something. Oh, my God. Okay, I'm ready. I'm moving now. Let me come back over here. And the next piece that I am going to put up is by Pam Wright, That Woman. I don't know. She's something else, that one. Making me nervous. She has the word pray in the title, so I can't wait to see where she goes with this. I'm going to duck and cover. No, I'm only kidding. I'm only being a smart aleck. Okay. And this is called The Living Prey of Corkboard Dreams. I love it, Pam. And I have an audio for this. So let's hit that button.
The Living Prey of Corkboard Dreams. With poised melancholy, she strokes the scapegoat to find the bleeding of the sacrifice to forked tongue thoughts of martinis and outstanding credit. She sits beneath pearl lunacy layered in a midnight sky. Once upon a time, she had a name. Today, her mind is too numb to remember what letter it began with. There is no cosmic interference. Only the organ grinder's monkey spreading jam for the toast of the town. Messengers of meaningless death swarm the crown to the solitude of Icarus dreams burning bright and fast. Towards the horizon glows a pop culture land of tinsel and corkboard dreams unfolding, sows and lemons tossed into bonfires. A land of cacophony catalepsy where every pinup doll has a decent priced therapist and a sturdy couch to buck and bray their way to the top. The living prey of devils in love with a culture of money and fame. The world is a grand party on the flip side of relevancy, poisoned honey lined with diamonds and fur. A madcap adventure of humdingers and hallucinations, where the rutting season of the dead carves price tags into carpetbaggers, and everything silver-lined is sinking beneath the chore of gulping down the screams. She knows that out there is a land of chokeholds and vomit, floating in bathtubs mixed with the last hurrah of neon and necromancers. It's all so bright and beautiful, light reflecting off of broken shards. Like a hungry child gripping the teat, she wants every last drop. She'd gladly bow before the reaper, be dealt to the master of the horned fay, be in the denial of her own gag reflex, swoon starry-eyed in a language of new age goons. She'd rather be the headline of a gossip rag, a still life photograph of smudged makeup, carnality and seances warping the clay stage of primordial performances. She'd rather have her 15 minutes of fame than die in the secondhand plaza of a poor man's boredom, where there is nothing but dead leaves and threads of indecency, an infection in the cut of sunshine and afterthoughts left to hang bare on the twine of a rough wind. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you to SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. Well, Gene, this one doesn't scare you, so what do you think? But you got to open up the mute button first.
Yes, I do. Pam, amazing as always. I mean, I'm listening to this and going, wow. I'm totally envious of where you come and pull all this from. You know what I mean? And that probably sounds silly to everybody, but it's pretty amazing to me because – first off, you put things together that I would never think to, which I find, you know, well, that's not too exciting because there's a lot of things I just don't get, you know, it doesn't click. But it's just absolutely incredible. Here, with poison, this is just the first stanza. With poison melancholy, she strokes the scapegoat to find the bleeding of the sacrifice, to Fork Tongue Thoughts of Martinis and Outstanding Credit. Hello? Hello? I don't know. It literally floors me every time I read one of these pieces by you. You know, like, you know, my stuff's all simple-minded stuff. You know, yours is always like, get these deep thoughts running through it. And I admire that.
Well, got me all choked up.
You're welcome. And I think that it was pretty amazing, right, based on this prompt. I'm sure the image was a prompt. And just incredible work. So, I mean, I don't really know where to go from there because I could just, like, bring up each stanza and go, wow, just wow. But I think you did a fine, fine job with this. And congratulations on the silver. Just a wonderful piece.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I got to roll off that thought I had with Aaron's on the last one. I got that quote wrong. Hard times make strong men. Strong men make easy times. Easy times make weak men. So on. That burgeoning cycle right there. Now, the idea with this kind of hits at a 1920s, mid-20s, debauchery and insignificance that roiled within Hollywood back in the day, that Babylon of debauchery, the idea that you can have anything and everything in the moment because you don't have to give a shit or care about anything. And if you walk within that, the organ grinder, monkey spreading jam, the toast of the town, messengers of meaningless death, swung the crown to the solitude of Icarus dreams, burning bright and fast. The idea of being in that plentiful moment to the point where it doesn't matter what you want, need, or dream of, it's at your fingertips in the moment, and how it leads to that point where you're just a performance piece in the moment, and nobody cares because everybody else around you is doing the very same fear, the same thing, and that left the hand there on the twine of a rough wind kind of hits at the idea when it all falls, when it all gets down to it, when that hard edge comes crashing down, you're left hanging because you're you're threadbare in the moment because you've let it all go in the meantime and you've got nothing else left to hang on.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you, Rex.
You're welcome.
Okay. I did not forget. I just finished up that little comment. Okie dokie. Amazing. Okay. Now, Rex, that is going to bring me back to you. And
I got the hard one.
Yes, you do. This is by Francisco Del Mar, and it's called Pecavimps. I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce it. I'm not even going to lie. So whenever you're ready, Rex.
Yes. Pecavimps by Laurent Montana. Okay. Ye the drear, desolate, and barren fields of despair and oppression, hark! The noble paean of the true forgivers, blossoming in billows upon the Sabbath of the righteous ones, and exalted therefore from transgression, as the hymns of reapers of the morrow shall resound in the willows. Ye the huddled masses of the destitute lawn of the thumb land, know there is hope amidst the unyielding fate of the swift sword, when the vintages of dirt and grime shall be ripe by the mighty hand that shall sow the countless seeds of the compassion of the Lord. Mourn the cadent souls who have perished in the bells that chime anew, when the seraphim of yore thus lives uplift their gentle spirits into heaven, cleansing a grievous country of division and discontent in time, with the might and main bellowing of a bracing tempest and leaven. Stand beside me, just brethren, as we march by the glory of liberty, where manacles of slavery shall not bond ye in shame any longer, as we shall sing those praises of hallelujah together in the grace of the forefathers of universal suffrage, whose voices grew thereafter stronger. Let not the boundless words of the laudable Constitution be lost in vain and tarnished in the lore of men and women of an unremitting toil, of a nation of the brave, the poor, and the meek, of stained and slain, weaned in the bosom of the rainbow colors of this wondrous soil. Rise from the fray of war and follow a clamor of freedom besought amidst the ephemeral supplications of the threadbare and forgotten, who bear witness to careless winds, stirring contempt, imbuing the juvenescence of the resilient sons and daughters of begotten. Begone the shadow of misgiving that lingers over the guise of hope, where the infinitesimal dreams become promises of the nation's reality. Clamber with denizens of beholders onto the edge of the lofty slope, where the oath of rectitude blesseth ye with such comfort and serenity. Behold the guardians of proud men of color, standing by gallant brethren, striving steadfastly for the innate rights of America that entreat equal justice. Stately are the paramount colors of a flag waving before laden children. Pecavinus, let us not falter in the temptation, but rid the injustice. Let not this country be torn any longer by self-righteous subdivision. It's united by the will of the devoted people of this great land, where the sweet voices of the echoes of freedom bring a glorious vision, and we stand all as Americans holding then hand to hand. End poem. All right, Pam.
Great reading, Rex. What an amazing write by Frank. Truly powerful, strong imagery. I like how he speaks on a history and our country and people, and you know, the idea of learning to stand together, to let go, and to stand shoulder to shoulder, to truly find the self-worth of our country, and you know, to be a virtuous people who love and embrace all. You know, wonderful lines all the way through. I really like, begone the shadow of misgivings that lingers o'er the guise of hope, where the infinitesimal dreams become promises of the nation's reality. And behold the guardians of proud men of color standing by gallant brethren, striking steadfastly for the innate rights of America that entreat equal justice. Amazing lines and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Gene, how about you?
It sounded like you almost forgot who I was. I liked it. Oh, my God. I thought this was just an amazing piece by Frank. Very well expressed and incredibly written. I did read his author's notes because I was kind of like following this down, and then I saw the song and I'm like, okay. But it's dedicated to the memory of Frederick Douglass and the evolution of America, as well as historical division that still haunts the nation. Even after the days of slavery and the Jim Crow laws, the life of the nation is secure only while the nation is honest, truthful, and virtuous. The white man's happiness cannot be purchased by the black man's misery. Great quotes, and I wouldn't usually use the word stunning, but it was a stunning right because it definitely made you stop it and think about it. And I think that it was just an excellent piece by Frank. So Frank, thank you so much for sharing with us. I really appreciate it. Great write for tonight.
Yes, it is that. A hell of a piece, mm-hmm. A bit different from Frank. I was expecting all those other words from the Viking engine. So this is definitely a different read. And Pecavinus is to sin, transgress, offend. Or in this case, we sin, we transgress, we offend. from the Latin angle, Pacavimus. It does walk itself from the angle of birth to now, but it also hits on the idea of the division. And unfortunately, that division keeps getting widened by the idea of what the media keep putting out and driving that home to the point where something is going to come about it, and it's not going to be a pretty sight when it does, because they're driving it hard and they're driving it mightily. So your back end of this, about arm in arm and hand to hand, I go along with that, and that's needed right now, because that division and that need to have that buried within our souls and minds is a very strong motive right now to keeping the people at each other's throats instead of where it really belongs, with those people making that drive. So nicely done, Frank. Thank you very much.
Nope, you got to sing a lyric or two. Sing a little bit. That was close.
Hey, go.
Okay, here we go. I'm going to go over here. And Pam, I'm going to get you to read the next one by Naomi Sarah. And I think this might just work out all the way around. Okay, whenever you're ready, Pam.
Everyone's Clouds by Naomi Sarah. Sunbathed grass softly tickles my fingertips. Hard iron of prison bars, cold on yours. Both dreaming as we watch white puffed sailboats silently soaring blue deep skies. End poem.
Great read, Sam. Thank you very much. All right, Gene, this is right up your alley.
Yeah, I gave her the short one, too. Go figure. What is up with me? And I have to read one. And that was the one I gave her. See how that works? I think this was a wonderful brevity. And I like the thoughts of it, because no matter where we are, you know, sunbathed grass tickles her fingertips. And hard iron prison bars cold on his or hers, whoever's. And really what it all comes down to say is no matter where we are, we kind of see the same sky. We share that, although, you know, we don't really think about it. We can't really compare notes because it might be minutes or moments or, you know, a day apart. But I think that we all have to keep that in mind, that we're not too far away from one another in a lot of ways. We have commonalities, you know, for all of us. So I think that this is just definitely a wonderful piece by Naomi. And congrats on this over. For first light. Nice. So great job, Naomi, and thank you for sharing with us.
All right. Thank you, Gene. Mm-hmm. All right, Pam, what about you?
Oh, this is beautiful. It's beautiful, philosophical, wonderful imagery and metaphors. I like how it speaks on the idea that no matter where we are, whether, you know, we're behind the cold bars of prison or out in an open field, we not only have those things in common, such as just like Gene was mentioning, but we all have those dreams that we hold on to. You know, when everything else in life seems out of balance, we have that ability to dream and to hope. So amazing write and very well done.
I've seen that picture somewhere before. I can't quite place the picture, but it does remind me of the introduction, the opening notes to the Benny Hill show with the Thames television motif in the background, and you've got very similar class to that. But I've seen it in something else. But like you said, this does point to the notations of two people, individual, one on the outside, one on the inside, and both holding on to the dreams that they have because of that separation itself. So, nice, Naomi.
Absolutely. Okay.
Well, dude,
Now, since Pam read the short one, I'm afraid to look at this one. Here we go. Not too bad. This is called Christmas Can Bring Miracles by Jenny the Deep. And I'm going to give it a read. Under the crystallizing labradorite sky, over the chocolate-frosted mountains, this Christmas Eve, like a fir tree, she stands strong, enduring the cold alone. Whispering in the winds, singing in its breeze, is a daughter's undying love for her mother. Anxiously anticipating her child's arrival, one more lonely night, a mom must survive. From afar, wishing on the same bright star, longing hearts hope to beat together again. A magical Christmas miracle it will truly be. If she can make it her family by early morn, by sled over mountains, a weary child comes home, back to her mother just in time. Four frozen hands now warming by an open fire, celebrating all miracles this holy holiday brings. End poem.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. And Pam, what do you think?
Yeah, this is a wonderful, heartfelt write by Jenny. You know, the idea of the thought of the Christmas birth that brings miracles, you know, perhaps it's like literally about the birth of Christ, or perhaps just simply about a mother and a child, and the meaning that a child brings to your life, and the love that they bring to your life, and I like this here, whispering in the winds, singing in its breeze, is a daughter's undying love for her mother, anxiously anticipating her child's arrival. One more lonely night, a mom must survive. I like how there's that idea of connected generations, like the love passed from a mother to a daughter and to the next generation, and the anticipation of the birth. Amazing write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Gene.
What do you think? I enjoyed the thoughts in this piece very much. A daughter trying to get home to her mother to share that Christmas joy together. And I think it was just a nicely written piece. By sled over mountains, a weary child comes home, back to her mother just in time. Four frozen hands now warming by an open fire, celebrating all miracles this holy holiday brings. There's something that takes us kind of back a little bit further, you know. It's not like a modern day coming home story, you know, because by sled over mountains, a weary child comes home. You know, I mean, people don't usually travel by sled like that. And I think that adds a richer kind of thought to it. Kind of reminded me a little bit of never mind. I can't come up with it, so I'm going to shut up. But I think that it was well done, and it added a little depth to it, and I liked that. So nicely done, Jenny, and thanks for sharing.
Nice. I do like that opening stanza. Crystallizing labradorite sky, chocolate frosted mountains. This Christmas Eve, like a fir tree, she stands alone. She stands strong, enduring the cold alone. So this is an older girl. She's already gone and left home. That second stanza kind of gives you the idea of what's going on. Whispering in the winds, singing in its breeze, is a daughter's undying love for her mother. Anxiously anticipating her child's arrival, one more lonely night, a mom must survive. So the idea of dad dead. So instead of this being a lonely Christmas for mom, she is traveling home for Christmas. Maybe hasn't done it in a few years, but it's particularly poignant because of that line, one more lonely night, a mom must survive, the note, the welcome note to what's coming. And the idea with the sled, it does bring back a note to something older, but It's also vernacular for a vehicle, like sled over mountains, a worried child comes home back to a mother just in time. Maybe it's on the cusp of mom being sick and or dying, but the sled itself does mean a car. You see something very special in the car itself. Nicely done, John. All right, then. We're back at you.
Did anyone see what Errant Panther put in the in the room? It made me laugh. He said there was
the last Christmas in July. Yeah,
I thought that was good.
Nice.
Oh my God! Yeah, we.
Oh
really,
my gosh!
It's so true, man. I thought we would never get where we are, but that was good. Good timing and stuff. Yeah, I lost the page because, of course, I had to go further than I needed to. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so Rex is going to bring me back to you. And this is called A Prayer for the Abandoned by Budo. So if you would be so kind.
Okay.
Thank you.
As soon as it comes up, come on. Refresh. There you are. A Prayer for the Abandoned. By Budo. If it is written that they, who are truly powerless, shall inherit the earth, then it is they who should speak. Speak for those who have no voice to quarry against armed armadas. No words to argue common sense in a world of mayhem and destruction due to wanton bloodlust, retaliation, and revenge. Where brothers lay aim and waste for the innocents who neither asked nor for nor deserved. Whereby nations rise via divine ascension onto the backs of the underprivileged. Their rights violated and neutralized by unlawful acts and treaties. Segregated to live in open air prisons, repressed and ignored are these. The ones that it is written for, rightfully owned. What has been stolen by reckless domains. And if no reprieve can be found, then truly only divine intervention can determine the outcome. To save all that is precious in each life lost every minute of every day in these years of our Lord. And Paul.
All right, Gene. What do you think? What do you think?
What an amazing write by Budo. It's so nice to have something of his on the board after so long. If it is written now that they who are truly powerless shall inherit the earth, then it is they who should speak. Speak for those who have no voice to carry against armed armadas. This is just an amazing stance that he's taken in this piece. To speak up about the injustices of the world. It's not, you know, overly done. It's not, you know, too much information, but it's enough to really put it out there and state what he thinks. And I think it was just an excellent, excellent piece. Budo, I'm glad you shared this with us tonight. I really think you did a fine job with this. And, you know, down here, and if no reprieve can be found, then truly only divine intervention can determine the outcome. To save all that is precious in each life lost every minute of every day in these years of our Lord. I mean, he really brought it full circle, and I think it was just fabulous, fabulous, right. And I wish I was a little more articulate to comment. But fine job, and thank you so much, Budo. I appreciate it, as always.
All right. Thank you, Gene. And Dan.
Yeah, this really is a powerful right, strong emotional impact. An imagery that's really gritty and raw, but at the same time, paints this picture of a world destroy by hate and violence, and the idea of speaking up against injustices and being a voice for the voiceless, for those who cannot speak for themselves. No words to argue common sense in a world of mayhem and destruction due to wanton bloodlust, retaliation, and revenge. And then I also like the ones that it is written for to rightfully own what has been stolen by reckless domain. And if no reprieve can be found, then truly only divine intervention can determine the outcome. Amazing write and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. It's true. And it's going to get a lot worse this year. It's going to be very interesting as many fields start burning, so to speak, because the truth is not out there and the lies walk heavy. So what is coming is going to open up a lot of eyes, and unfortunately there's going to be a lot of death that comes with it. And that's all, because it isn't just because greed, lust, revenge, and retaliation. That's part of it, but there's a whole lot more deeper that most people don't know a lot about, because they hide it well and they want to keep it hidden, because if it gets out, they don't get to live anymore, and they don't want that. So, nicely done, Budo. Thank you very much. All right, Gene.
Okay. Let's see what I have here. Quarter of. So who wants to find me a poem? Rex, how about you? We haven't heard from you tonight on your poetry.
Sure you have. I've been reading all that long.
You've been reading. That doesn't mean it's anything you've written. Don't be so damn fresh. Actually, I have one more piece left on the board, okay? And it's not going to take us all night to do this one. But I'm ready to put it up, because this is called I Once Was Me by Robert M. And there is the link, and I have an audio for this. So here we go.
This is my recital of I Once Was Me. In the deep recesses of self reside the ghosts of never was. Dreams, moribund from their conception, shattered victims in the vorpal vacuity of my miserable mental maelstrom. Time mercilessly devours pockets of hesitation, and all of the would-nots and have-nots meld into a macrocosm of perpetual loss. Ruination masquerades as divinity, spewing its credence to my withering mind, painting my destruction as a welcomed respite to lifelong attrition. Peering deeper still into my internal abyss, I cannot even find the fool I used to be. Seems he is buried beneath the jargon of whispered hopes that have collapsed upon themselves in the chittering darkness. Clouded memories line these ethereal walls like a tapestry of failure, shrouded in a fog of confusion and uncertainty. I feel as a lantern in search of a flame, knowing damned well that it cannot survive here. In the distance, I noticed a rippling at the center of this murky hellscape. Distorted sobs and curses emanated from there, enveloping me in an aura of bitterness and unease. In the end, my mournful meandering may have come to fruition, an ashen corpse frozen in a timeless stasis, displaying the look of horror on its twisted visage. I seem to have found the fractured remnants of me, a warped anomaly drifting through chaotic debris, the vestige that once flailed upon the stage of woe, who embattled an emptiness that few could ever know.
Great read, Robert. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. All right, Pam, what do you think?
Well, first of all, I think now I know who Jean sounds like when she's sick. She sounds like Robert.
Oh, my God. Poor Robert. Oh, my God.
No, I thought that. but that actually was a wonderful read by Robert. He always seems to know the right tone to carry to read a poem. Such an amazing dark write all the way through, the emotional impact of losing the person you once were, to fall into that deep abyss. And really amazing imagery all the way through, great word choices. I really like Time Mercilessly Devours Pockets of Hesitation, and all of the would-nots and have-nots meld into a macrocosm of perpetual loss. Every single time we are denied something that we so desired, and it eventually just starts to build up. Amazing dark right all the way through, and very well done.
All right. Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
Well, Pam, I actually recorded this for Robert. I just want you to know.
That's what I thought. I
Smart
was wondering.
Poor Robert. He'll never be the same after that comment. Good Lord. Don't you pay her any mind, Robert. You sound way better than I do. Anyway, I thought this was a wonderful piece. And I'm so glad you brought it to me. He actually gave me this last week, Pam, for either your show or my show. And because I was sick, I totally lost track of it. So I'm sorry I swiped it from you, I guess, you know.
Oh, no worries. No worries at all. Yeah, I'm glad to have had it on the show.
Yeah.
Very cool.
It's a wonderful piece, he does have such a wonderful way of darkness in his writes. I mean, Robert can really write dark poetry on so many different levels, too. It's kind of amazing. And even though there's a common thread, they do not, they're totally unique from one another, and I love that. And I kind of picked up these two stanzas. Peering deeper still into my eternal abyss, I cannot even find the fool I used to be. Seems he is buried beneath a jargon of whispered hopes that have collapsed upon themselves in the chittering darkness. Clouded memories line these ethereal walls like a tapestry of failure shrouded in a fog of confusion and uncertainty. I feel as a lantern in search of a flame, knowing damned well that it cannot survive here. There's such a fabulous use of words and thoughts and imagery in this. It's not imagery that, you know, you're going to turn around and read and, you know, every other poem coming down the pike. It definitely has a voice of its own. So, Robert, I want to thank you for sharing with us, as always. Excellent piece, and very well done.
Nice. I mean, we hit that by talking to the hellscape of one's own mentality, lifelong attrition, the chittering darkness, that which calls to you. And then with a clouded memory, lying in the third world, the tapestry of failure, shrouded in a fog of confusion and uncertainty. I feel as a lantern in search of a flame, knowing damn well that it cannot survive here. That cloying, that darkness, that susurration of chaos and the chasm of darkness, which rips at the mind and keeps you buried in that angle of depression. Desperation.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh,
absolutely. Well, okay. Well, who found me a poem?
All right. I got one for you. It's not new. It's an oldie. It's a good one.
we don't mind all these. At least I don't. Yeah.
Truth in Neverland, Alice's Hole. I came across this caterpillar scene, a hookah-smoking gent smiling at me. He said that he lived in open dreams, where colors flow bright within dancing streams. He invited me to sit and take some rest. A puff or two would be my acid test. He stated, your party arrived very soon, as my chandelier started singing his tune. The air was alight, our puffins aglow. That burgling brook was putting on a show. Purple and orange fish jumped in the air, where plasticine flowers shone with grand flair. Then, in marched his white hair with brevity, a single mad-hatted entity. He strode within his own serenity and claimed he was just marching with complexity. This wide-eyed day was beginning to hum as my chamber slowed to a steady thrum. That wild rabbit was chewing on sorghum as he gently rubbed his bloated tum-tum. Then, in floated this teapot I must tell, its porcelain carriage off of the smell, and those teacups lying in the courtyard, you see, where that mad hatter was supping his tea. In came this hairy litter box stuffer, that Cheshire cat with one ripe old buffer. He stroked his whiskers, ignored the tiskers, while the bum in his paws was about this, yeah? A purple haze hung around that sea line, where that big old dude walked the tree line. He wore an ear-to-ear, big-toothy grin, and said, time for a cuppa, let's tuck in. There, little Alice was a naughty one. She stuffed the pockets of her cardigan. There's a mummy in the window, and she was in love with orange sunshine. The fire was grand, and now she was late for her riverbank tea party prom date. Alice been down this hole many times, and there's an enchantment at the end. The reason she came again and again was for that long tall form of his wooden brain. He'd bend the road and wallow her bum for a lusting eye craved in fortune funds. All right, Alice, close down just a bit. There's plenty of time. Take a look at this. And breathing that tea and hazy sunshine, as your soldier can wait to ply that line. The clearing is set, tablecloth laid out, tea and biscuits, buttered scones all about. The hatter had a bomb, a cone of gold. He released the car and took the full load. He coughed up a plume of sweet, pungent smoke, was red in the face and began to choke. We all had a good laugh, took turns and toast. The night was young, we'd all begun to stoke. Old Caddy pulled out some Primo hash sheets, black tar sticky with a tiny white crease. Pale blue smoke wafted, softly kissing the air, as the doors to awareness we would share. We chased the dragon as Alice dug in to a baggy film with window paints in. We all took a tab and relaxed a while as the colors and trails began to smile. This world came alive, the trees were breathing, our minds alight with a cosmic season. We were one with all and everything, with nature's infection, we began to sing. Within these woods, we were born to be wild. We are the nexus that was left unfiled. Our loving nature is forever styled to tune and balance what you have revived. If you pop down a rabbit hole with me, these are the very things that you shall see. Toking and smoking, dropping some LSD will lighten your soul and set your mind free. Alice gets a little washy when it's late. You see, down here, she can embrace her fate and get into her most basic desires while buffing your soldier and his squires. Come one, come all, for the hookah and tea, and we shall have one righteous party. Never be offended when you walk this way, or if you hear Alice say, I'm not wearing any knickers, tee-hee, and that glowing fireplace now stands match-free. I want your tickling deep inside of me, where your wooden trinkets can splinter free. So you thought you knew what Wonderland was when you read that book, just you and your cuz. And once you're down here, there's only one goal, to pleasure that palace in Alice's home. Grace Slick has just some bought airplane tickets, and the stubs did the claim to just heed the white rabbit and remember what the dormouse said. Feed your head.
Yeah. Great job, Rex. Great job. Pam, do you want to make comment? I know you're chomping.
Oh, my goodness. I am so glad you brought this one out. Yeah. I had to put this on, you know, my amazing rights list. I was impressed the first time. I'm impressed again. You know, when you bring out your Mad Hatter voice and you delve into the realm of Alice in Wonderland and bring out your fun, intelligent, dry humor with, you know, all the vividness. I mean, this is really such an amazing trip. It's a ride down the rabbit hole that will never be forgotten, and I just love it all the way through. So great job there, Rex.
Oh, thank you, Neil.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Rex, this is great all the way through. Wonderfully psychedelic. So many crazy circumstances, you know, from pulled between the craziness of the story and how you turned it and twisted it into more, just a really well done piece and enjoyable. Yeah, and Grace Slick even got a part in this one. That's pretty good. Absolutely. Wonderful. Thanks for pulling a piece for us tonight, because we, God knows, we needed one. And I want to thank you guys. Rex, I want to thank you for co-hosting with me. Pam, I want to thank you for joining in, as always. It's always great to have you hanging with us. And my voice definitely appreciates it. Wait till I talk to Robert, though. You're in trouble.
Well, now you can rest.
Amen, amen. I can't wait to, like, just... you should have heard me earlier today. I sounded like I was growling all night. It's terrible. But I appreciate you both. Hopefully next week I'll have a better voice and I'll be able to put it to better use. And I hope you both have a great rest of the weekend. And I'll talk to you soon. Thank you, everybody who tuned in. I hope everyone enjoys the poetry. It was a great night, as always. So thank you very much. And y'all take care. Thanks, Rex. Thanks, Pam.
Night, gang.
Night.